federale appena potrà capire il datato.
Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective on CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from the unceded ancestral and current lands of the Hunkamina-speaking Musqueam people. Our opening song is Nibby, or Water, by Mitch Koda.
Thanks for tuning in to Unceded Airwaves. Tomorrow is the annual Women's Memorial March here on Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh territory, or what is colonially called Vancouver. So today we'll be talking about the systemic violence against Indigenous women, Two-Spirit, and queer people. We don't have any graphic content, but here is our warning that we are talking about a difficult and emotional topic.
To start off today, we have an interview with two matriarchs. From the Splatsin Nation, we have Jody Leon, who is involved with Joan Churches for the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. And then from Sikwipwip Nation, we have Ida Manuel, who is with the Tiny House Warriors.
Before we get into those interviews, we'll introduce ourselves. Nisla'an Kwetasawit, I'm Steph. I'm a citizen of the Squamish Nation.
Hi, I'm Jamuna Gele Tamang. I was born on Tsleil-Waututh territory in North Vancouver, and my mother comes from Nepal, and my father is Ukrainian and Dene Métis from Northern Saskatchewan.
Dringweezy, Autumn Snow Village, Chief Jim Cooey, Janet Cooey, Jacqueline Cooey, Wade Schnell, Shadeji. Hi, my name is Autumn. I was born and raised in Miskwetchiwiskayagan, which is Treaty 6 territory, but I am originally from Treaty 11 territory. I'm Gwich'in and Inuvialuit, but now I have the privilege of studying here on Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh lands, and I feel really lucky to be able to study here at such a colonial institution.
Oki, Zanak Oki, Stomiki Soku. Hello, my name is Wasey Little Light. I am from the Blackfoot Confederacy of the Siksika Nation, currently residing here on Musqueam land.
Awesome.
We're going to hear from Jody and Ida, who are personally talking on the search for missing and murdered Indigenous women. In the past 2 years, 5 women have gone missing near Vernon. Their names are Caitlin Potts, Ashley Simpson, Deanna Wirtz, Nicole Bell, and Tracy Genereau.
All of these women went missing very close together, and all within an hour radius of a home of a man named Curtis Wayne Segmowen. Segmowen is a 38-year-old white man from Salmon Arm. He's faced multiple charges for violence against women. In 2017, 18-year-old Tracy Genereau was found dead on the Segmowen family farm, where he lived with his parents. Segmowen didn't face any charges. And last December, he was in a court for charges relating to having laid down a spiked belt on the road to his home. A woman trying to leave his home drove over the belt and had her tires damaged. He was given a charge of simple mischief, which, as Jody and Ida point out, is the same charge Indigenous people have faced for being part of the peaceful protests.
Jody and Ida were demonstrating in Port Coquitlam last week, where Segmowen was meant to face a 5-day trial for the assault of a woman with a hammer. They planned to be there every day, but on Monday, the first day, Segmowen took a plea. Instead of assaulting, causing bodily harm, he got simple assault. He got 30 days of prison, which actually amounted to time served. He also got 2 years of probation.
Segmowen is also going on trial in Vernon in September for discussing his face intent to commit an offense, for multiple firearm offenses, for uttering threats in possession of a controlled substance, and for possessing a weapon for a dangerous purchase. And in December, his trial in Vernon, or wait, and in December, his trial, he's in trial in Vernon for another assault.
So I spoke to Jody and Ida on the phone about their work during their own searches and trying to find justice for Caitlin, Ashley, Deanna, Nicole, and Tracy. And we had a very long phone call, so the recording just jumped straight in partway through the conversation as Jody describes how close all of these things happened. And I also just want to apologize preemptively for the audio quality. It was recorded on my cell phone, and about halfway through it really improves, but the beginning is a little bit rough. So without further ado, here's that tape.
There was Caitlin Potts, who is Perk Cree. She had gone missing in 2016. And the distance between the Segmowen farm and where she was last known to live is a 25-minute drive. Tracy Genereau was a 20-minute drive from where Segmowen lived. The road connected to where Curtis Segmowen lived was a road called Yankee Flats Road. On Yankee Flats Road, there was two additional women, one who was partially Haida. Her name is Deanna Wirtz, and Ashley Simpson, who went missing within 2 months of each other. And they were Curtis Segmowen's neighbors on the road above the Segmowen farm. And in addition to that, 10 minutes from the Segmowen farm, according to media reports, belongings of Nicole Bell, who also went missing and was reported to be going on a date the day that she disappeared, and all the RCMP knew was that she was being picked up in Salmon Arm, which is attached to the Segmowen farm, close to the area where her purse and one other item of her belonging, like her cell phone, were located. And that, again, is a 10-minute drive from the Segmowen farm. Nicole Bell, Ashley Simpson, Deanna Wirtz, and Caitlin Bell have all vanished without a trace. So if you took a compass and put a dot in the middle of the Segmowen farm and reached and used a peg to mark where each of these women lived, all of them lived within less than half an hour of the Segmowen farm, including the two that only lived 5 minutes away. The Segmowen trial that occurred over here in Port Coquitlam, giving Curtis Segmowen a 30-day jail time for the assault against the Maple Ridge sex trade worker, and that with time served, time and a half served, would equate to 7 days. And there is a court trial coming up, 7 days in September of 2019. And it is of utmost importance that there's support for that, because it's a lot larger than just somebody who is charged with mischief. It's a lot larger than just somebody who has been charged with assault with a weapon. It's a lot bigger than that. Ashley Simpson, her ID was found recently in a man camp called Pink Mountain. And why her ID would be found years after she disappears in a man camp is concerning.
This is really disturbing. It's a very a neighborhood that you wouldn't be expecting to witness something so horrendous as that assault with a hammer. And Jody did speak to a neighbor in that area, in actually just from two doors down, who had witnessed the assault. You know, there wasn't any witness testimony admitted into that court on Monday. I just feel like there was support on the victim's side. These guys would have taken this a bit more seriously. But just going off of how they've dealt with Picton, they're already the way that they're handling, desensitizing these murders against women, the violence against women, but also there's the women in the sex trade industry, or Indigenous women, Indigenous lives. So we do need to keep the pressure on. We do need to keep the awareness out there, because when we had stopped to talk to those residents that lived in the area of the Picton farm when we went there, mm-hmm. they had no idea. They had no idea about Picton or the history. And just while we were in that location, we witnessed so many women walking on that trail by themselves.
How did you react or feel on Monday, knowing all of this and then hearing the extremely minor sentence?
My heart went out to the victim, because I know for myself to feel that shook about it, how she must have felt for her safety. If this guy got 30 days, 2 years probation, is nothing. The message is that you can get away with this, which is why I talk about how Canada's message is loud and clear. They don't care about women's lives. They especially don't care about Indigenous women's lives. mm-hmm. you know, because we are targeted 7 times higher than non-Indigenous digging. But with all these publication bans, it just makes it a bit ludicrous on what we can share and what they're limiting for the public to know.
Like more things we could know about the victims and like who they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if they didn't make it so hard for us to be able to piece all those individual fragments of all of these cases together.
Yeah.
Like for us to put that together, questioning, I wonder just how, like that started with the question of, well, I wonder how far the Picton farm is from where the winery was, from where the blueberry cranberry farm was.
Yeah.
From where. And then it is so close. It's just right across that river. You go drive out there and you'll see all the different little ravines, all the different waterways, all different sizes and depths. You know, and the question that arose for me was, did they even search all of these waterways? There's so many places that I saw that are sketchy for places, possible places of hiding for... There's so many women that have still yet to be located.
Yeah.
Still that are missing. They're taking it upon themselves to do their own searches, realizing Indigenous people can't depend on the public protective services.
And how are you going about your research, and how are you sharing that research so that, yeah, like people can find out and can know and can be educated?
Well, some of it's done through our Facebook pages, but some of it's just as grassroots do, by word of mouth and mm-hmm. by reaching out. It's the best way, really,
mm-hmm.
because, for example, when we stopped to talk to those passersby, we wouldn't have known the little tidbits about they're not even knowing about Picton if we hadn't stopped to talk to them. And through sources like yourself that are helping to get this awareness out there,
mm-hmm.
any groups or alliances that are willing to help us in this research and point us and help us build up this data, this information, because it's so much bigger than even we've found. Everything I've shared with you is just the tip of the iceberg. We don't know how far this goes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't know who else is related to them and who else is learning off of these predators.
Yeah.
Who else is idolizing these predators and up and coming, and they're going to be the next generation. How do you have 5 missing women, you know, within the area? How do you have, you know, a guy that moved all around, you know, with all these, how can all those commonalities exist, and yet this guy's getting 7 days in jail? Is the public going to be let down? Are they going to be put in a situation of extreme risk? And is it going to be Squetmic women, i.e. our nation, you know? And what have they learned, you know, or what should they have learned out of the inquiries? Because Wally Opal, they spent all that money. All of those, you know, have pointed out all these recommendations, you know, that should be occurring. So why do Indigenous women have fear in their own community, you know, of you know, women going missing? Seriously, shouldn't they have answers to what happened to Tracy General? Shouldn't they be, you know, actively investigating Caitlin Potts? You know, and we formed the drone team over 2 years ago. We've done multiple searches within the area. We haven't, you know, seen the RCMP, you know, out questioning people, you know, like we have.
You guys do so much grassroots work to bring attention to this. Like, what can actually be done to ensure justice and also safety, what can be done?
Well, I think, you know, from our allies, people that are within, you know, the university culture, educated people who are aware of the system should all be, you know, doing a mass on-the-ground rally going to, you know, places, you know, that within, you know, the federal and provincial government that are responsible for safety in Indigenous communities and demanding, you know, make a study about what the current issues are, you know, and make a position paper, you know, that we are standing, you know, as allies, and this is what we witness and see, you know, and it is our tax dollars that have paid for these, you know, these commissioned studies, and yet we see the same mistakes being made over and over again. We can just keep pulling them out and out and out and out, and it doesn't take very long to look.
where the system is really failing our people.
Mm-hmm.
The government, federal and provincial, had basically signed on, you know, saying that they have signed on to the UNDRIP. They've signed on to international law, you know, allowing Indigenous people to have their own autonomy. And under UNDRIP, if you read it, we have autonomy to, you know, basically have the systems protect our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the realms of our culture is that women are traditionally sacred. Women mm-hmm. are life givers. Women are to be treated with the respect. And yet within our Squamish Nation here, there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have protection of our women within our nation. I don't feel safe in my community. I don't feel safe doing the work that I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
you know. I don't feel that the RCMP are doing enough to protect me in doing this work, to protect, you know, the women that are within, you know, the nation area. We don't feel safe having women going murdered or missing within our small community of 960 people. No way.
Mm-hmm.
And where are the police there to come out in force? The only time they came out in force was when Tracy General was discovered.
Mm-hmm.
Where are the RCMP to protect the women from being killed from trailer hitches? Where are the RCMP, you know, to help stop predators from coming to pick up on, you know, our women, you know, who are vulnerable at the hands of other people? We've got enough to deal with without having serial killers, you know, moving into our unceded, unsurrendered lands, you know, and where those people have moved in. That's being thrust upon us and forced upon us because the issue of unceded, unsurrendered lands is basically unresolved at this stage. So
yeah.
Why should we then be forced to have people living in our communities we don't want there, you know, and who are making our grandmothers and our granddaughters and our daughters and our mothers and our sisters feel unsafe? Stop the politics. Stop the bullshit, you know, and get moving.
And I, in the last month, have had my tires flattened on my SUV, my car, and I've had lug nuts loosened on both vehicles. So what do we do now as Indigenous women?
Yeah.
Can we go to the police with this? And if they're not actively searching for these missing women, they're not going to doing anything for us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tracy General went missing, you know, and they told the police, the police told the public that there was nothing to do with these murdered and missing women, the five of them. And yet her remains were found on that farm. And yet here we are over a year later, and there is no charges for Tracy General. None. Don't you think that they should have made reference to the fact that he's under investigation? Shouldn't they have made reference to the fact that he had other charges, you know, that were pending at that time? Shouldn't they have made reference to the fact that one of the charges that he's currently going to be going up against was assault with a 410 rifle? And why would they plea down, you know, and remove, you know, the issue that he was assaulting a woman, a sex trade worker, with a ball peen hammer? When he's going up on charges with an assault with a weapon on another case, why would you drop one?
Yeah.
When they're both, you know, a repeated behavior, a repeated pattern of behavior. You think that would be the last thing that the Crown Counsel would be arguing to make a plea bargain on in those circumstances, especially given, you know, the fact that all these missing women, you know, are missing, you know, around his farm, mm-hmm. his parents' farm. He got off. He got acquitted in Vernon on the issue of a mischief where he had used a spike belt to trap a woman, you know, that was called to his farm. And they didn't talk about, you know, the fact that Salmon River Road is a friggin' scary place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Salmon River Road, if you get stuck on Salmon River Road without a cell phone, you are screwed. You're not getting help. There's no cell range. There's not anywhere that you could actually run. You know, the neighbors' places are isolated, you know, and very far apart. And if you're going to get sexually assaulted on the road like Salmon River Road, you're going to be out of luck. And they allowed each of those to be basically broken down into little smaller segments. You know, yeah. That should not be allowed to happen. He gets knocked out on that charge, you know, for the hammer. Well, then they got nothing to say, you know, when he goes up on the 410 rifle. You know, then it's going to be, oh, well, he's a first-time offender, Your Honor. That goes to state the gravity of, you know, what the offense, you know, was, you know, with an assault. Doesn't look like the gravity of the crime is not that serious. He got 30 days, you know, 30 days, you know, when, you know, about Mayuk and Aisha, you know, and Snoot. With respect to that, you know, they went in and basically did what UNDRIP says that we're allowed to do. We're allowed to have our political voice under human rights and under international law to speak to, you know, our land rights, and yet they were criminalized. And they were criminalized with the same charge that Segmoan was given. You know, and yet the victim, you know, is being dragged through all this time, you know, that charges were never pressed. And then 6 years later, only after Segmoan human remains found on the property, do people sit up and pay attention and start taking notice of who Segmoan really is.
So that we weren't building up the public awareness and support for the victim. We were there. We showed up to support her. I just think that it was strategy for them to cut that right at the beginning because they didn't want to have a whole Picton-looking trial. They didn't want the community mm-hmm. to be, but not thinking about the safety of the people or the women or the awareness that needs to be out there. Because how many more is O'Quinn getting off with just minor mm-hmm. or maybe with no charges at all so that they can say that no prior charges. They just repeated that in that courtroom that day on Monday. And we have to get on top of this. Just like the icebergs are melting, they're developing as quickly as we can find this information out. You know, because look how long, I remind you, it took 6 years to get that assault with a hammer into court. And then they just dismissed it, basically, with a 30-day, it whittled down to 7 days and probation. You know, he's got upcoming trials. So Jody was saying that they'll be keeping him in lockup, and then he'll have more. It'll just be time served. They do time and a half for the time served. When he comes with his upcoming trials in Vernon, that it'll just be they'll whittle it down to time served, and something to stay tuned on for sure. Oh, the Crown prosecution is handling this case. Upcoming, like we said, how they detach it all and divide it all up into separate issues instead of involving it all, which is very necessary to see just how serious this man's criminal history against the violence against women. I don't think that they want to alarm the public because it looks bad on them. You know, it starts looking bad towards, you know, their accountability to the people. And they don't want that as public knowledge. They don't want the finger pointed at them, so they're going to do everything in their power. And they know how to do this because they've had practice. The Picton case or any other cases that they already know how to sweep under the carpet. Because yeah. When we say these things and there's just so much information, look how long it took to just tell you this much.
Yeah.
For all of our information, right?
Yeah. Like
there's more to learn about. There's more to read on. There's more to get right out there on the land itself and go and see for yourself where yeah. is the winery and how close it is to the Picton farm.
Have you guys ever gotten in direct trouble for anything that you've shared online? Like, for example, I know you've been intimidated, but has someone told you like you're not allowed to say that or something like that?
No, everything I've taken from articles that okay. are already previously published. So anything that was already published, we were allowed to share. It's really surprising about how many people are not paying attention to this case because they keep whittling it down to, you know, what he got this time was simple assault.
We talked about this taking care of our needs as activists to have you know, call out, you know, for any allies or advocates to come forward with help for us, you know, to have personal security devices and in helping us to get, you know, like an alarm for my car, security equipment for our homes and personal security devices that we can carry upon our bodies.
And yes, teaching us about what happened for the Picton child, the threat towards those that were involved with outing all of this information. You know, there's a lot to learn from that, and I know there's a lot of people that are afraid because these are killers we're dealing with, right? And then they also have teams of protectors, and unveiling all of that is very dangerous.
We call on all of the artists to go on to the number 5, go on to the Yellowhead Highway, all within the so-called BC. Go to the highway where the pipeline runs and you make your mark like this. So BC will know when they see color like this, when they see this, they'll know we are still here, and we say no to the man camps. That's what this red means. No to the rapes and murders of our children and women from these men who are coming to these camps. Our women are disappearing day by day, and that's what this is for. This is for the man camps. This is for you, Canahoose. This is for you because you stick up for all of us women to prevent the murders, to prevent the rapes of our women. That's what this red mark is. So go people, and make your red mark on the Highway 5 all the way from Kamloops all the way to Jasper. We want to see this red mark all the way there to remind the people that we have women going missing. We have women getting murdered by these white supremacists.
Aaron slammed her face into the glass window of a fire extinguisher case. He pulled her head back and hit her again, continuing to do so until the glass broke. The woman sustained deep cuts all over her face and eventually became unresponsive. The man then released his grip and she fell to the floor. This is a scene from an Emmy Award-winning cartoon. If we want violence against women to stop, shouldn't we stop treating it like a joke? Join the conversation at #NotOkay.
FM Vancouver Reloaded, playing your favorite tunes and mouth-humping your ear holes full of voice talk. Yeah, we do that.
Tune in to African Rhythms every Friday from 7:30 to 9 o'clock with your host, David Love Jones, as he plays a heavyweight selection of classics from the past, present, and future. This includes jazz, soul, hip-hop, Afro-Latin, funk, and eclectic Brazilian rhythms.
Lots of people, they take it like a game.
Welcome back. You're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CRTR 101.9 FM. We just heard from Jody Leon and Ida Manuel, two women who are searching for women who have gone missing in their communities. And you just heard Righteous Empowered Daughter by JB, the First Lady, off of the album of the same name, which was just nominated for Best Hip-Hop Album by the Indigenous Music Awards.
So after listening to that interview, I guess just what's on everyone's minds, just in terms of the march and violence against Indigenous peoples?
Well, I mean, of course I'm thinking about the march that's happening tomorrow in the downtown east side. Does anybody know information about it? What time does it start at?
Well, there's the family and community part, I believe, starts at about 10:30, mm-hmm. and the actual public march starts at noon at Carnegie Hall at Main and Hastings.
And I believe there's like a drumming circle and singing that happens, so mm-hmm. I think that's a really important mm-hmm. event to attend. I know UBC First Nations and Indigenous Studies cancels all of their classes on the 14th for students to attend, and last year I had a trans studies class cancel class as well, because I think that it's a really important topic and people who understand how important it is and can afford the time to cancel it do. But also I know people actually accommodate their schedules around it here at UBC at least, so I think that it's an important thing to talk about and think about, especially in regards to the interview that just happened. And yeah,
I'm really impressed that classes are putting aside time for it, actually, because it's not exactly like time off, you know,
yeah.
that you're taking, but I'm really impressed that people are putting aside the time.
Yeah, especially my FNIS class that's happening tomorrow, because class was canceled yesterday for the snow day, so we get 2 whole weeks for that class off, which is really interesting. It's kind of sad because we were supposed to be reading Sarah Hunt's Decolonizing Queer. I don't remember what it's called, but it's basically, she was talking about queerness and positionality. So I'm kind of sad that we didn't get to talk about that in class because of a snow day, but I'm not sad that we get to go to the march instead.
Yeah, yeah.
Are we going to cover the march for Unceded Airwaves, Jeff?
Yes, well, hopefully. Something we were just talking about ourselves before the show started was wanting to make sure you're also doing it in a respectful way and only gathering what you're permitted to gather and it's appropriate to gather.
And but, welcome to gather.
Yeah, but we'll definitely be in attendance and in support for sure.
Mm-hmm. I know I'll be there for anybody who's an Autumn fan since to Unceded Airwaves for the past 2 seasons. I'll be there.
The only listeners we have are because of Autumn.
Because of me. You might recognize my voice. I feel like it's very unique. What is everybody else thinking?
She tweet a photo with Autumn.
Yeah, everyone can take
Autumn from Unceded. Unceded Autumn, because our body is ever seeded.
I think, is there anything like on your mind, Wacy? Wacy's our new volunteer.
I'm very intrigued to see the march tomorrow here in Vancouver, because I understand the march originated from here in Vancouver. We have the march back home in Calgary. But I don't think it's just on the same scale as what we'll see here. I've gone for the last 2 years back in Calgary, and yeah, ready to see it in a new city.
Did it happen on Valentine's Day?
It does, yes.
In Calgary as well?
Yep.
Wow.
Same time as here.
Cool. Wow.
That's great.
Transcontinentally. Even though it's not, but I don't want to say like trans-Canada, because that's bad.
Trans-territory?
Trans-true. That's Transnations. No, because then you have to acknowledge Canada as a nation state.
Autumn keeps us in check.
True.
Is there anything on your mind?
Trans-territory.
Trans-territory. Trans-territory. Love it.
Sorry, I cut you off, Jamona.
No, no, no.
What are you thinking about?
I'm just, yeah, I'm actually really thinking about this Wilson-Raybould I don't know what it is. Situation.
Phenomenon.
I guess situation.
Yeah. What word do you use?
So, I guess we'll just kind of jump into that part of the show, if that's okay. Yeah, it feels relevant to touch on this this big shift that happened in government. If you haven't seen, we'll just share a little bit about what we've kind of gathered about it. Yesterday, February 12th, Jody Wilson-Raybould resigned from her position as Minister of Veteran Affairs. She's a Kwakwaka'wakw First Nation woman and was the first Indigenous person to be the Minister of Justice and Attorney General of Canada.
Her resignation comes 1 month after she was moved out of her position as Minister of Justice to Veteran Affairs. Many people say that this was a demotion.
There's a lot of speculation about why she left her position, as she has not given a reason because of confidentiality agreements with the government. But her father, Bob Wilson, has been pretty vocal about what he thinks.
Shuffle down to Veterans Affairs, as important as it is. You know, that was a clear slap in the face for all Indians across the country. She was demoted to this, I think, the only thing lower than Veterans Affairs is Indian Affairs. And so for all Indians across the country, that was a real slight. And I had sort of expected her to resign at that, because I'm a bit more pig-headed than she is, obviously. I would have resigned immediately, and I wouldn't have taken as important a portfolio as defense and some way to keep quiet, which seems to me what the Prime Minister tried to do to a woman that has integrity and won't listen to that kind of stuff.
Sorry, I'm laughing a little bit. So Tanya Talaga wrote an opinion piece for the Toronto Star yesterday, and we're just going to read a few lines from it. Quote, Trudeau was elected promising that the relationship this country has with Indigenous people was, to him, of the utmost importance. When Wilson Raybould was appointed to Attorney General, it signaled that maybe he meant it and that this time would be different, end quote.
Later on in this article, Talaga continues with this. But it wasn't long before that old familiar feeling of doubt crept in. There was a little progress on bringing clean drinking water to First Nations. There was big talk, but no action of revising the Indian Act.
Talaga then says, it must have been increasingly uncomfortable for Wilson Raybould in cabinet, watching as the government ignored its promises on making First Nations, Métis, and Inuit proper partners in everything from drafting legislation to fulfilling funding commitments.
Now, I just want to play one more clip with Wilson Raybould's father. This clip is from 1983, and in it, Bill Wilson is addressing the then Prime Minister, Pierre Trudeau.
I have two children in Vancouver Island, both of whom, for some misguided reason, say they want to be a lawyer. Both of whom want to be the Prime Minister. Both of whom, Mr. Prime Minister, are women.
Tell them I'll stick around till they're ready.
Mr. Chairman, I'm informed by the government of British Columbia that one of them could be out here on a plane this evening.
I love that clip. I love that he, it must have been pretty frustrating to be in that room surrounded by people laughing. So I think he really took that in stride with a lot of grace.
Yeah, he kept it pretty straight-faced. And I actually thought, he was able to have a bit of humor at the end. But that just said a lot about the position of Indigenous people and women at that time.
That the line, they're both women, was literally like a punchline. Mm-hmm. It's just insane.
And he knew. I mean, he was saying it because he knew that was the reaction that was going to happen.
Could already hear the guffaws.
But it's still unfortunate that was the reaction that he knew was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like, so true. Walking in there, knowing. And I think, and also in regards to Talaga's piece, when she says, it must have been increasingly uncomfortable for Wilson Raybould and cabinet, watching as the government ignored its promises. I feel like uncomfortable is like the most polite term you could possibly give it. That must have also just been frustrating. I don't know. We'll never know because we weren't there. But
and also how Talaga says that old familiar feeling of doubt crept in, because I think that's a very relatable feeling for a lot of us, especially thinking about tomorrow and the march and how familiar that feeling is. But it's unfortunate that it has to be familiar.
Yeah, it just being putting yourself in a visible position. Mm-hmm. It's just like also putting yourself in a vulnerable position.
Yeah.
Yeah. And was it the BC Union of Chiefs that was saying that a lot of the media coverage or I guess just like commentators kind of saying things like, oh, she was difficult to work with or like inadequate at her job is also kind of like gender and racially driven kind mm-hmm. of criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's a lot that we do not see that she was doing, you know, those cabinet meetings and just things that the public is not exposed to. So we can only imagine what went on behind closed doors. And because she was really vocal, she was very upfront about what she stood for. And usually that's through a lot of censorship that she's able to, this is just what my understanding of politics is that, you know, they can only say so much. So we can only speculate and imagine what was said behind closed doors and what led to this decision, because she's not really saying.
Mm-hmm. I also think that it is a familiar feeling, though, just like as an Indigenous femme, people telling you that you're difficult to work with or people telling you that you're not doing a good job at your job when you're like, you're doing just as well as other people are. You're just maybe more vocal about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they find that that comes across as difficult. And that comes across as like somebody who isn't willing to work with other people.
Yeah, just trying to engage with the state, like working within the federal government. Like, I just can't even imagine how much difficult that must be as an Indigenous woman. Like, just having, I don't know, you're trying to represent like the people and then facing obstacles at every turn, like bureaucracy at every turn, trying to get stuff done.
And also just like, especially after her resignation, just think about how people addressed her as opposed to ways in which she was addressed when she was still at her old position or the one that she recently resigned from, and she's still an MP and how that she like her position hasn't changed extensively, but it's changed enough for them to just want to completely disrespect her.
I'm really hoping sooner rather than later she's able to like consult with her lawyer and come out and like talk with her voice beyond her written statement. I really want to hear, and I hope like stuff comes out of the inquiry and we find out more about what actually happened.
Yeah, and it is something to be mindful, just as the media, of like perpetuating this stereotype portrayal, you know, of her being difficult to work with, and you know, almost putting the blame on her for this whole thing that's happened. You know, I just finished reading Michelle Obama's memoir, Becoming, which I gotta
would say, you recommend?
It's a very good book.
So you would recommend?
I mean, I won't even get into it, but you know, any
please
person
do.
it's one that every person of color should read, actually, especially if you're a woman, and just really, really inspiring to see what, you know, hard work and perseverance and the ability to believe in your own message more than what other people are saying about you. You know, a person who's been in the spotlight, she talked about how Michelle Obama talked about how she was portrayed as this angry Black woman, because that was an easy trope to go back to, and it was an easy way to cut down her message because people were able to, you know, or believed it really easily. And so I think we just need to be mindful about the media that's coming out about this and to read between the lines, even when we are being I think media is doing a good, well, you know, it's trying to be politically correct in a lot of ways, but they're not always getting it right. So we can just do our part in questioning, you know, these stories that come out and digging in a little deeper, not take things at face value, especially around, you know, this topic, because the government and, you know, they're going to try and paint it in a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also probably like thinking about how hard it would be for her to be portrayed this way. She already has to do so much educating on a daily basis to like have more adversity put in her way and to like have to come more stereotypes than she probably already has to in cabinet behind closed doors.
And there's in such different situations, but it really reminds me of the way that Jodi and Ida were saying that everyone, yeah, just writes them off as protesters or once again, the kind of cliche, like angry woman.
Or like thing. I remember when after Uni Stoughton happened and like people were arrested at Gidim Den, they were like a lot of the media was saying that they were chanting instead of acknowledging them as songs or as art. Beyond like something that to me I feel like chanting has a very negative connotation. It reminds me of people who are like standing in a circle and appropriating a lot of times instead of acknowledging these, like, this art for what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have anything you want to add, Wazy?
I just was just thinking about how in politics, workplace bullying is not only kind of like allowed, but it's almost like encouraged. And so, but the workplace bullying still happens outside of politics. And I find that with a lot of women with color, and specifically Indigenous women, the higher you get up, the more workplace bullying that people have to deal with, which is really unfortunate. And so as long as like they're already dealing with all these adversities and all this ladder climbing that they have to deal with, but they're dealing with the workplace bullying on top. So I just want to encourage people to look out for your family that are in high business positions or in politics or media, and just make sure that your homes feel as safer than your workplace.
I think also adding on to that, thinking about trans women and trans people and non-binary people and queer people and how much adversity they face on a daily, and then going into a workplace that is unsafe for you to express those sexualities and those ways of being, there's a lot to think about. Like, there are a lot of trans Indigenous women who can't get jobs because they're seen as atypical, and that's not fair. So I think that if you're talking about feminism, you need to include all women and, like, all people who basically aren't cishet men, and also cishet men, but less focus on them in your feminism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's just, like, there's still just such erasure of, yeah, anybody who doesn't fit into those blocks that we're...
These colonial stereotypes.
Being. Yeah, totally.
Decolonize.
On our way, maybe.
We're trying.
We're really giving it our best shot.
Okay, so we'll just leave it at that. Does everyone feel like they've voiced what they want to say? Okay. That sums up our show for today. Thanks so much for listening to Unceded Airwaves. If you can make it, the Women's Memorial March is tomorrow, and it starts at noon at Main Street and Hastings outside Carnegie Hall.
Be sure to tweet us at Unceded Airwaves and let us know what you think or if you'd like to be involved. Unceded Airwaves is volunteer run by Indigenous and non-Indigenous volunteers, and we'd love to hear from you.
Up next is 120 beats per minute. 120 minutes of beginners playing music. But first, For Women by Women by Equal and T-Rhyme. I'm Autumn Cooey Schnell. I'm queer, and this was Unceded Airwaves.
Women are the world. Identify your pride for inner child and little girls. women, four women, by 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 women, ride or die, woman, stay fly and hold us up high, woman, four women, by women, ride or die, woman, stay fly and hold us up high, woman, four women, by women, ride or die, woman, stay fly and hold us up high, woman, four women, by women, ride or die, woman, stay fly.
It feels hot.